This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Debate is going to question, does surgical bypass offer the most complete revascularization of the foot? And on the pro side is Dr. Owens, on the con side is Dr. Armstrong. So why don't we start with you, Chris?
So I'm not going to make fun of my own title. We've been having some fun with some of my titles earlier in the program, but this is kind of a fun topic. There's very little, you know, I can speculate and I can show you, but there's very little hardcore data up to head-to-head comparisons. But maybe we can have some fun with it. So I got no disclosures relevant to the talk. So when there is no data, what we do is we attack character, and. We'll start with Aaron. Now, he looks like a, you know, very clean-cut, upstanding young man. Practices in Colorado. He went to Harvard, you know. Worked at MGH and did a little stint at UCSF in cardiology. And then he's sort of John Laird's protege. So he's an up-and-comer. Keep an eye on him. But, you know, it's nefarious. Everything's not as exactly as you see. So here he is in the cath lab and, you know, looks pretty chill there. I'm sure it's for some photo op, but what you don't know about Aaron Armstrong is he's a wife carrier. Yes, it's true. He's a North American wife carrying champion. Now, what is a wife carrier? Gotta ask ourselves. So, one thing is, North American champions Aaron and April Armstrong were featured in this guest on a first episode of I've Got a Secret. When you're a wife carrier, you may also be interested in cheese rolling and some of these other interesting facts. So actually, Aaron is an Estonian-style North American wife carrier, which is you carry them upside down, which is, I think, is pretty cool, Aaron. It's amazing what you can find. Aaron is going to tell you that a decrease in amputations is due to the increase in endovascular procedures, as can be seen in the graph to the left. But I'm going to submit to you that the only thing more endovascular procedures are related to is more spinning. We know that. And spinning is not necessarily related to more complete revascularization or even outcomes, and we would like to think that, and that is a big question, linking spinning to outcomes, which we can't really get into. It's association versus causation. I could say that reduction in amputations is related to more iPhones sold, or reduction in amputations is more to more Facebook users, or reduction in amputations, more people sequenced, or more genomic testing. Really, what it is probably mostly related to better podiatric care, more thoughtful revascularization strategies, and better medicine. And that's coincident with the reduction in amputations over the same time frame. I bet you that when we look at it deeply and we come through, we do all our modeling, this will be what counts. It's prevention amputation clinics, et cetera. Understanding the risk factors of the people who are at risk for amputation. So I'm going to show you a case. This is a 66-year-old man with type 1 diabetes, 2 to 3 month history of ulcer over the plantar aspect of the left foot, non-healing with conservative measures. This is non-invasives or ankle pressure of 60. Now he's a 66-year-old type 1 diabetic. Who's seen many 66-year-old type 1 diabetics? There are a few hands out there, but there's not that many. We saw a few in Boston when we were there. So ankle pressure of 60 is probably somewhat non-compressible. Toe pressure 0. Monophasic waveforms in the foot. High grade common femoral artery stenosis and a velocity of 460. This is his vascular exam. He's got only doppelable. He's got +2. Right femoral, +1 left femoral with a thrill. Popliteal is absent, and his pedal arteries have Doppler signals. Feet are warm, no cyanosis or gangrene. Cap refill present. Left foot, 45 millimeter ulcer in the lateral plantar aspects of the foot, metatarsal head region, no cellulitis drainage. Probes to near bone, sensitive, no other lesions noted. This is what the foot looks like. This is what the x-ray looks like. This is the little pinky toe here, and you can see the ulcer. You can see a little osteopenia here, maybe some periosteal reaction that could be consistent with osteomyelitis. So So what's this patient's Wi-Fi stage? Well, I think his wound is probably a 2 and his ischemia is 3, so I think he's stage 4. I have to cheat every time to do the Wi-Fi staging, so I was just asking Alex what this was, so he told me it was 4. Operative planning: left common femoral endarterectomy and left leg angiogram with possible intervention. And you can see the common femoral artery was endarterectomized in a patch angioplasty. This was crossed without a problem. He had a diseased TP trunk and included AT, PT, and perineal. So what do you do? Are you going to bypass that? Are you going to try to get through it with a wire? You got a reconstituted posterior tibial. Now, when we did vascular surgery jeopardy, we saw a nice vessel here come down, and then you saw one going off posterior and one coming off anterior and reconstituting some of the pedal vessels, but you don't see that here. So there's a lack of perineal reconstitution of some of the pedal vessels. So we did recanalize the perineal, and after you do that, you give yourself a high five and whatnot, but then you got to reassess the patient and see if you've made a hemodynamic change that's consistent with healing, or maybe you use a Profusa Lumi oxygen, or you do something to tell you whether you've healed or not. So his total pressure improved, but it's only 34. That's not very robust in a patient with type 1 diabetes. I think you need more than that. Wound with no demonstrable improvement. What should our next step be? I'm pretty sure you all know. Bypass, of course. So he had a bypass to the posterior tibial. Now, his posterior tibial was not that diseased, but yet the bypass amped up his blood flow, and he healed just fine, was able to close it. They actually resected the piece of this bone here, and he's doing fine. So the principles of revascularization is restore inflow blood to the foot. You can do that with both methods, especially in cases of tissue loss, pulsatile flow. But if you have a 4-millimeter saphenous vein going down into a distal tibial vessel, do you think that might be better than revascularizing subintimally or not subintimally a 2.5-millimeter calcified tibial artery? I think it might be. After you've done the revascularization, you've all felt that hot foot. It's almost like it's radiating heat. It's got so dilated. You get that once in a while after endovascular revascularization, but a lot of times you don't, and I think it's because of little small emboli. Usually goes away, but I don't think you get the cleanness of the revascularization. Multi-level disease, always treat the inflow first. We know that. Common femoral artery endarterectomy and hybrid or common combined procedures. With rest pain or minor tissue loss, stage the approach. You don't have to do it all at once. Surveillance and vigilant follow-up. This is the key. You got to understand the patient, understand his motivations or her motivations and their goals, and try to subvert them to make sure that they follow up. Low threshold for reintervention, including conversion to open bypass surgery and endovascular failure. What would you do in this guy right here? So I can tell you that this does not go up to his knee. It doesn't even go close. Really very poor right here. And then he's got a little bit of an arch with this one plantar. Non-healing partial great toe amputation. 68-year-old man, 40-year history of diabetes. So diabetes plus PAD, bad. So we did a bypass on him. Now look how slow this goes. I mean, it is barely trickling down. This is an arm vein bypass. You think this is going to stay open? I mean, this is just barely moving. He's got heart failure, too. Here it goes. The heart's pumping it down. It actually goes a little slower than it really does in real life for some reason. Anyway, you can see it right here. It fills that one vessel. Well, that was our post-op imaging. I can tell you this guy's doing great. This bypass is done fine. This guy is a patient that Alex and I take care of in the Wednesday morning limb preservation clinic that we have at the VA, and he's had one single segment cephalic vein harvest because we did a distal origin graft off the popliteal artery to that plantar artery, and he's happy as a lark. I don't even think he realizes how close he came to a bad situation. This is what his post-op surveillance looks like, and he's very highly calcified. You can see the acoustic shadowing here. This is a waveforms, 23.7. That's his peak systolic velocity. Now, we're told that peak systolic velocity under 40 centimeters per second is a sign of an impending failure, but it's not when you have a big graft going down to a pedal vessel. This is just fine. He had a lot of augmentation on the OR. From the OR, I knew he was going to do okay because of the augmentation that we got with a little injection of papaverin. And then that was his distal angiogram with 127 over 32 going into that vessel. So you can see it really speeds up. A lot of blood flow to the foot. When you have issues like this right here, and these are all our limbs preservation patients that we have, and you came to this conference, you're going to see some gross foot pictures. You knew what you're getting yourself into. This right here is where it matters, and this is where the rubber meets the road, and that's where critical judgment decisions affect tissue at the end of the day. And you got to make the right decisions and do the right and most appropriate thing first. In some ways, it's whatever's easiest, I think. It's easy equals durability in some situations because you do it better. Hybrid, there is no best one or the other. We know that. Matt knows that. But the NIH, you have to put it in the question in a study in a hypothesis testing way. Surgery up top, endo on the bottom, or vice versa. We do it all the time. We do a bypass to the popliteal, then we do endovascular reconstruction below, or we do the other way around. Endovascular first has anatomic limits, physiology of the patient, bypass surgery first, best for Wi-Fi 4. Presence of a vein, if you got to have a juicy vein, that's your best choice. My first choice is always ipsilateral, or if the greater saphenous vein is absent, ipsilaterally, contralateral greater saphenous vein, vent arm vein, then prosthetic vein with a cuff, and then only then do I go with a cryo vein, or if there's an infected bed. And I hardly ever use the small saphenous vein. I can't think of any other better argument than the coronary literature, which Aaron's a cardiologist, and they know that there's a more complete revascularization when there's diabetes plus three vessel coronary disease. The two or three trials have shown bypass surgery, CABG surgery works better than PCI. I submit to you that CLI is sort of that three vessel coronary disease of the foot. Thank you very much.
That's great, Chris. So next up is Aaron. Aaron, the gauntlet's been thrown down. I would say that, I don't know if you went there or not, but I would imagine it's a pretty dangerous prospect of going onto the internet and looking up Chris Owens. But if anyone's up to the task of challenging Aaron, Chris on this topic, it's Aaron.
I'll need some help on that. Thanks, Chris, for pointing out my prior 15 minutes of fame as a wife carrier. I suspect that as the token cardiologist in the audience debating one of the course chairs that I may be fighting an uphill battle. But these are my disclosures. And so as a bit of background, I wanted to provide evidence that tibial bypass does not always heal wounds. If you look at the long-term follow-up of over 1,000 patients who underwent infrainguinal bypass for critical limb ischemia, 78% of grafts in that cohort remained patent at 1 year. Among the patent grafts, however, 10% of patients still had clinical failure. This included a significantly elevated rate of major amputation, as well as persistent rest pain. If we look at other important analyses, including the PREVENT-3 cohort of 1,400 patients, 11.5% of those patients had major amputations, and again, a significant percentage had non-healing wound despite the presence of a patent graft, suggesting again that the graft patency may integrate with the patient comorbidities, but also the graft itself may not be providing the adequate outflow to the foot. So what are the limitations of surgical bypass in these types of settings? Well, I can think of three major limitations that I think endovascular therapy can provide us with additional therapies. The first limitation is that generally with surgical bypass, we can only perform revascularization to one runoff vessel. Second, surgical bypass cannot always target the angiosome of the wound, I think effectively as endovascular intervention can. And third, in general, I think Chris showed a nice example of a distal bypass to a pedal target, but it's difficult to perform inframalleolar bypass, and I think that in many cases, technically, endovascular intervention can provide a better result for inframalleolar disease. So here's an example of a patient I treated a few years ago. He was a 64-year-old man with a non-healing plantar and lateral foot wound. The wound, of course, was in the angiosome of the posterior tibial artery, and you can see that his own native posterior tibial was occluded proximally with a distal reconstitution. And while he had a patent anterior tibial artery, he had significant high-grade stenoses throughout its course. So I think from an endovascular perspective, many people would target the anterior tibial, and this is fairly easy to treat with balloon angioplasty. And in reality, I think that if this was treated surgically, probably a surgical anterior tibial bypass would be performed. However, I felt it was important to target the angiosome as well. So after revascularizing the anterior tibial, I gained pedal access through the posterior tibial and then advanced an 018 wire retrograde across the posterior tibial occlusion and was able to cross into the true lumen. I then performed balloon angioplasty from the foot with pedal access. And then you'll see at the conclusion of the procedure, I essentially had three-vessel runoff. I revascularized the anterior tibial, but then also had flow down the posterior tibial and a reconstituted peroneal. And you can see here at the conclusion of the procedure, by reconstructing the foot, the patient was able to have a significant flow to the angiosome of his target wound. And I think you'll also see that it looks like the pedal arch is incomplete in this case as well, again suggesting that if he had been surgically revascularized to the anterior tibial, that he likely would not have had adequate wound healing. So what about inframalleolar angioplasty? A recent series was published looking at 29 patients who had both infrapopliteal and pedal disease, and pedal angioplasty in that case was performed if insufficient angiographic wound blush was seen after the infrapopliteal intervention. And while this was a small cohort, what they found was that faster wound healing rates were achieved if pedal angioplasty was performed. And I think this is important because when we look at the pedal loop, it's important to recognize that the pedal loop is often incomplete in patients with critical limb ischemia. And this necessitates the use of either an angiosome-guided intervention or reconstruction of the pedal loop itself. So here's an example of a patient with a non-healing wound who had runoff primarily through the anterior tibial artery. And then you can see that if you perform bypass to this anterior tibial artery, the plantar arch is not intact. So the likelihood of providing adequate cross-collateralization to the location of the wound is low. So in this case, this was a technique that was initiated by Dr. Graziani in Italy. They were able to go down with a hydrophilic wire and reconstruct the pedal arch and perform balloon angioplasty distally, such that then there is flow across the anterior tibial into the medial and lateral plantar vessels and provide an adequate wound blush as the final result. So as a final example of, I think, a case where endovascular intervention performs better than surgical bypass, this is another patient I treated about a year ago with a history of coronary disease on hemodialysis. He had a persistent right great toe wound. He had actually previously undergone angioplasty of the right anterior tibial artery. And he actually was recommended to undergo a below knee amputation because of poor wound healing. He was referred to me for a second opinion prior to undergoing BKA. And you'll see here on the angiogram that he had runoff via the anterior tibial and a peroneal that provided some cross-collateralization. But really, when you look down at his foot, there was evidence of an abrupt occlusion of the anterior tibial at the transition into the dorsalis pedis, such that the flow down to his toes was primarily via collaterals and not direct inline flow. This is something that I think could not be addressed easily with surgery. In this case, I went down with a Fielder XT wire, which is a tapered-tipped hydrophilic wire. I was able to cross through this occlusion using chronic occlusion methods and enter true lumen. And then I performed pedal angioplasty with a 2x100mm balloon. And you can see at the conclusion of that procedure, he then had straight-line flow through his dorsalis pedis and better wound blush to the site of the wound. The patient subsequently healed his foot and did not require a major amputation. So in conclusion, I think I've shown you some pretty compelling evidence that endovascular intervention offers many advantages for foot revascularization in patients with critical limb ischemia. Specifically, when we look at it compared to surgery, endovascular intervention offers the ability to treat multiple vessels, to target the angiosome of disease, to treat inframalleolar disease, and also reconstruct the pedal loop in order to maximize wound healing. Thank you.
Thank you, Aaron and Chris. I think, if nothing else, those two talks bring us all the way back to the beginning of the session, which is the importance of staging and comparing apples and oranges and the need for trials and also the need to have all the skills to really be a complete center with multidisciplinary care and offer patients what they need when they need it. But having said that, it was a debate. So the question of the debate was, which technique offers the most complete revascularization of the foot? How many people will vote for Dr. Owen's open bypass? I'm raising my hand, but I'm not supposed to. How many will vote with Dr. Armstrong, endovascular intervention, multi-vessels? All right, well, It's close, but I think Dr. Owens got this one this year, maybe next year. Okay, so Chris, do we do questions or are we going to do cases?
I don't know.
Well, why don't we, I think we do have a case or two. Dr. O'Banion, are you here? Are you ready to go? Okay. And then maybe we'll have 5 minutes left for questions. We can break at 10:35.
All right. So like Dr. Conte alluded to earlier, for CLI, the treatment goals are ultimately the relief of pain, healing of wounds, preservation of a functional limb, and to minimize the risk of other major cardiovascular events. So you want to have effective revascularization, but also have effective lifestyle modification and medical therapies. So key factors in decision-making when revascularizing a limb, you want to take a look at the whole patient, looking at the general health of the patient, the likelihood of a functional limb salvage, as well as the severity of limb ischemia and the anatomic distribution. And once again, looking at patient risk, severity of limb threat, and the vascular anatomy. So I'm going to present to you a 73-year-old female with diabetes, COPD, and peripheral arterial disease who was directly admitted from our limb preservation clinic with worsening ischemia of her left toes over the past 3 months. She was a smoker, otherwise relatively healthy. She had non-palpable pedal pulses and dry gangrene to her digits, first through third digits. She also had ischemia extending onto the dorsum of her foot with some boggy necrosis and infection centrally. Her ABI was 0.43 with a toe pressure of 0, and she was a very high risk for amputation with a stage 3 of her Wi-Fi scoring. And this was a picture of her foot when she presented to us. So my question to you is, do you think this limb is salvageable? So A for yes. Can I get a show of hands? And then B for no. All right. So most people think that we can salvage this. We did too. So we took the patient for an angiogram, and these are just a couple of the slides, but essentially she had a 70 to 80% occlusion of her stenosis of her common femoral common iliac artery. And then what you don't see is that she had pretty significant common femoral disease with a flush occlusion of her SFA, which reconstituted the proximal popliteal, and then she had a short segment popliteal and TP trunk occlusion, and then her anterior tibial artery reconstituted and provided the dominant runoff to the runoff flow to the foot. And we also did vein mapping at this time, and she had no autogenous vein available for use for conduit for a bypass. So at this point, I guess my question to you is, how would you manage this patient? Would you offer her a primary BKA? And then there's several other options. Would you offer a hybrid approach or an endovascular versus open? So any takers for A? All right. B? C? D? E? Or F? Or maybe there were some options that I didn't put up here. All right, so first and foremost, this patient had an infection, so we took them to the operating room, our podiatrist did, and performed the initial debridement, which consisted of removing all of the necrotic tissue off the dorsum of the foot and incising the deep space to drain all of the infection, and then amputating the first three toes, which had evidence of complete gangrene and necrosis. So at this point, kind of for the podiatrist in the audience, what would be the next level of amputation that you would consider? Would you refer this patient for a Bologna amputation? Do you think you can salvage this with a TMA? Or would you take this patient for a Chopar or a Lisfranc? So any show of hands for A? B? C? Or D? All right. So before we get on to the definitive amputation therapy, we took this patient to the operating room for a hybrid therapy to revascularize the foot. So we did a left common femoral endarterectomy with patch angioplasty, stented the left common iliac, and then did a femoral to anterior tibial bypass with cryovein. And then she ultimately went with our limb salvage podiatry team for a Chopar amputation. This, as you can see here, this is her post-procedural angiogram of her bypass going onto the anterior tibial artery, which then provided complete runoff to the foot, reconstituting the pedal arch. She then went and had her amputation, which consisted of a Chopard amputation. As you can see, we had a large posterior flap, which provided good closure for the foot. And at her four-week post-op visit, her wound was healing nicely. She had a palpable graft pulse and a biphasic anterior tibial signal at 1 month, and she was actually ambulatory with a prescription shoe. And at her three-month follow-up, the wound had completely healed, and she was ambulating with a front-wheel walker. So as you can see, we allowed this patient, who was fully functional prior, who would probably have been severely debilitated with a BKA, we were allowed to salvage her foot and prevent her from being non-ambulatory. And so keys to success in limb salvage are going to be to treat the patient in the limb, not the lesion, because you want to ultimately maintain functionality of the patient. This often requires a multidisciplinary team, and then also remembering that time is tissue. She presented with a very severe infection, and getting her to the operating room to control the infection and then effectively and quickly revascularizing her were our two first priorities. And then having a long-term relationship with the patient, having vigilant surveillance, as like we mentioned earlier, is going to be key to maintaining the limb salvage of this patient.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.